nothing can live up to that.
Hello and welcome to the 2012 inaugural show for At Random. My name is Rick Timmis.
And I'm John Wordsworth.
And I'm Jackson Matthews.
And on tonight's show, we're going to be talking about iRacing. iRacing.com is the website where you can go and find out more about this. And I suppose I probably ought to start off by putting a little bit of background behind what this is and where it came from. A little bit before Christmas, at the end of 2011, I was toying with the idea of buying myself an Xbox.
which is
Well, I was also thinking, really long and hard about the PS3. I'd seen John playing Forza on the Xbox, the racing game, and I'm a big racing fan. I played Gran Turismo when it first came out, Gran Turismo 1 on the PlayStation 1, etc. I just simply could not justify buying a Microsoft Xbox because I'm a Linux geek, and that's absolute, utter blasphemy to do such a thing. So I ended up looking at the PS3 and was thinking about that. And I started thinking to myself, well, hang on, why do I want to buy this thing? We've got a Wii, and you know, I play on the Wii or somewhere with the kids, the different games that they've got. What do I want to buy a PlayStation 3 for? And really, it was because of Gran Turismo, because I'm just a big petrol head, and I really wanted to do that. So I thought to myself, well, maybe I wonder what racing games are out there. So I did a couple of Google searches for different stuff and found iRacing.com. And so I went and had a look at some stuff on YouTube and was floored is the answer, really. I mean, I was very impressed with the film, the videos that I saw, and was just watching some of those. So I went and decided to download this thing, predominantly because it was cheaper than buying a PlayStation 3 and Gran Turismo. And obviously seeing the empty bank account and the truckloads of toys coming from Argos for my little girls, buying a PlayStation 3 couldn't really be justified. So that's what I did. So I downloaded it onto my little laptop and got it loaded up and running, which fortunately had enough system controls to do it, and had a little joystick, an old joystick to play with. So I'd done it for next to nothing, went online, and took out a trial subscription to try it out for a month. And the reason why I'm so tired today is because I haven't done anything since. Driving, my wife said to me, "Don't you get tired of driving around in circles?" And I said, "Well, I don't, you make it sound so simplistic when you say driving around in circles, but it's a race circuit. But sure enough, it is a circular track, and you go round in a circle."
I was going to say, how can you make it sound so simple? Some of the tracks have a kink in them, and some of them are a bit of a wiggly shape.
Absolutely, and they've got hills. You've got bits and down bits. You
up and down, yeah. No, she just doesn't get it.
And if you're getting really bored, you can come into the pits and somebody put some new tyres on. all pretty good fun. Anyway, the long and short of it is that I've been playing it for a little while now, and it's really fascinating and really interesting. So that's what I've been doing, and that's basically an introduction to what it is. And I know you guys have had a little look because I've been bantering you about it for weeks. I just, the first thing I say is, iRacing's great. Off I go. But there we are. So yeah, so that's what I've been doing. Ask me some questions and tell you some more about it.
Yeah, that's, sorry, Jack, go on.
I was just going to say, because you compared it to Gran Turismo.
Yeah.
I mean, how does it compare to something like Gran Turismo? Is it different? I mean, in terms of, like, I don't know, realism or specs, I mean, you see your laptop can handle it, right? But I gather you've got a pretty decent laptop. Because most people are going to have heard of Gran Turismo, if you're going to put the two side by side, what are the major differences?
Okay. Well, I think the first thing to say is I haven't played the latest versions of Gran Turismo that are on the PlayStation 3. I think the last one that I played was Gran Turismo 4, was it, that was on the PlayStation 2?
It was a PS2, yeah.
Yeah, PS2. I originally played the first Gran Turismo on the PS1, which the graphics were a bit more simple. And
I severely doubt they've changed much since then. We'll give you the email address later if you want to pick us up on that.
That'll be a show at random.org. Just address the subject line to Jackson Matthews and then put all your expletives in there.
Gran Turismo 1, I got that for the PlayStation 1. It came with a massive manual, didn't it, about how to drive a car?
Yeah.
Like a 45-page how to race properly sort of book. I thought that was really cool because it meant the simulation was... It was a simulation as opposed to just being a racing game.
I think that's the first thing to say, is that it's about this distinction between simulation and racing games. So there are, you know, lots of racing games about. I mean, the ones that come to mind are Pole Position for the BBC. and things like that. And then obviously racing sims. Well, I think the thing to say is that you don't have the same level of flexibility in iRacing that you do in something like Gran Turismo. Let's be absolutely clear. iRacing isn't really a game. It is a simulation, a racing simulation. And I'll put some more meat on the bones as to why that stands out as being quite remarkable, I think. But in Gran Turismo, for example, you can play in one of several different modes. So you can start in, when you start, you can start with different degrees of difficulty, beginner, right the way through to simulation, which is the top one for Gran Turismo. Now, when you start in beginner mode, it's going to do a lot of stuff for you. It's not going to give you real tyre physics. It's not going to, you know, the control of the car is going to be much simpler and so on and so forth. And then you can go right the way up to Gran Turismo playing in simulation mode, which, when I used to play it, is just so bloody difficult because the car is just so twitchy and so sensitive, and it gets away from you, and you need really fine motor controls on the paddles to be able to control it. iRacing is just like that, so there isn't any kind of like easy. I mean, you've got a couple of controls that you can switch on to give you brake assist and give you throttle assist. I haven't tried them, but the steering assist and the car physics is like a race car would be. So you come into a corner and you start losing control. You don't get all of this feedback telling you it's going control. You get the feedback because you can see a tree in the bottom. so it is much more difficult to drive. And the other thing that strikes you straight away, the difference, is that in Gran Turismo, you can be right at the bonnet of the car. You can be over the bonnet of the car. You can be over the car, behind the car, and steering it, driving it from different views, like in the third person or whatever. In iRacing, you haven't got any views at all. You are in the cockpit with the dashboard in front of you, and you've got the view that you would see if you were sat in the car, because of course it's a simulator, so that's the difference really. But the visual graphics that you see, I've seen obviously in the shops, I've seen Gran Turismo 5 on the PlayStation 3 and the graphics that it can produce. And then, courtesy of John today, I've seen the level of graphics that you can get out of iRacing using a powerful NVIDIA graphics card. And, well, to be honest with you, my eye couldn't see a difference between the two. GT5 is like, you know, very spangly, shiny graphics. So that's how I would describe that comparison, really.
Yeah. I'd say, just from experience of a couple other racing games, I'd say it's probably 90% of the quality. It looks like a year old, I'd say, I guess. Some of the cutting edge games that are coming out now, obviously, in graphics wise.
That Forza slightly, that we played before Christmas, when we drove around on Forza a little bit, the graphics on that were better, I think, than in iRacing, definitely.
But not a massive amount. I don't think it would change your enjoyment of the game if you were playing it as a simulation, you know?
No.
The sort of person who would like enjoy a simulation, I think, wouldn't worry about that last 10% of graphics shine.
No, yeah. No. He wants a certain... I said he there. I'm making vast assumptions. But you've got to have a certain amount of graphic competence, haven't you, for a simulation to be effective. But that 10%... They'd rather that 10% was spent on the other aspects of the simulation.
The physics.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah.
But I think I'm under the impression, correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason why it's quite rigid and strict, like you have to be behind the wheel and things, because they've gone for a really realistic model with the actual game as well. So it's not like you can just sit back and go, haha, I'm going to race people, wait for 10 people to come online and then just race them for fun. You're actually racing in kind of hourly tournaments, aren't you? So
that's
every
right.
race kind of matters in that sense.
Yeah, it does. So this is where it really steps into a totally different realm, and it goes really from being virtual to more real world.
This is what really
set it apart for me. And why did it set it apart for me? Well, because I used to run a physical race team. So here in the Southwest, I used to run in mini stocks, and I built the cars and built the engines, and I had a female driver, Bev, who was my girlfriend at the time, and we used to run all the oval circuits here in the Southwest and drive this car around and so on and so forth. So you get to know about the rules and the way things work. And obviously in real racing, I mean, one of the things, for example, if you're in a racing Gran Turismo, and you're racing against the computer, that's the first thing to say. So your opponents are other computer cars, and the other computer cars are predictable. So you get used to knowing what they're going to do and where they're going to brake. And they do, you know, at the same corner at the same time, they take the same line, the same braking line and everything else. Even if you're really close behind them, the car in front of you won't change its line. in real world racing, that's not how it is. The car, when you're 500 yards behind the car in front of you, it's taking the clean racing line, but when you're right up behind it, it's closing the door on you because it's being driven by another human being. And that's in iRacing, there are no computer AI cars. It's because it's all, you have to have a connection online, and everybody else on that track is behind a steering wheel or a joypad, sitting there looking at the screen like you are and thinking about it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So you're racing against other people, but also it means that there are all kinds of rules. So, for example, in Gran Turismo, if you wanted to get through a corner, you might hit the car in front of you and sort of like knock that car off to put you on the line. Yeah, you can't do that in iRacing. Well, you can do that in iRacing, but you're more than likely you'll both crash. That's the first thing that happens.
Yeah, you'll spin out of control or something.
It has built into the software, it has a marshalling system. So in a real world race, you have marshals around the track who watch the racers to make sure that, like in oval circuit racing here in the Southwest, contact is allowed. So for example, you might drift into somebody and there's a little bit of barging going on because that happens on the racetrack, and of course it's close racing and there can be a little bit of budging, and you see this in touring cars and all, and don't see it in Formula One, but touring cars and so on and so forth. There's a difference between this kind of nudging and shuffling of paintwork on the track and deliberately taking somebody out by hitting the back end.
That grease lightning style.
Yeah, exactly, that grease lightning style. So when you you've got the spikes on the wheels that just chew everything up.
That'd be looked on unfavourably.
You'd definitely be getting, definitely somebody be wanting to add text to your license, your race license for that one.
Awesome, there we go.
So the marshals sit around the track with yellow flags and black flags and so on and so forth, and of course they can black flag you and give you penalties and so on and so forth, and then there can be a steward's inquiry to look at a race incident to decide whether somebody deliberately tried to smash somebody off. Because of course, you know, if you're racing for championship points, one of the simple things to do to get ahead in the championship is to take the car in front that's got more points than you and smash it into the wall.
That's right.
Now he can't race for the next two races, particularly if you smash the car and him at the same time.
That's it.
But it's deeply frowned upon.
Yes. Especially in a team, I guess. If you're a racing team and you can sacrifice your lower driver to take out the biggest competition.
Yeah, exactly. And well, I mean, that happens in teams in real racing anyway, where two drivers will drive, and obviously the second driver's job is to be an obstruction to slow down the other drivers.
Yes.
So translate that then to iRacing, and how does that work? Well, what happens is that the steward model for effectively managing the points that you get on your license for driving badly is handled by the software, and the software doesn't make any decisions about who's right or wrong. Two cars come together on the track, then depending on the degree of impact between those two software objects will decide how much your safety rating gets affected. So you go round a track for 10 laps, say, and you make say it's an oval, you're making four turns, 10 laps, four turns, 40 laps. In those 40 laps, you have three incidents, where one of which where you smash into somebody really hard and you get four times contact points, one where you bump them and you get two, and another one where you nudge the wall and you get one. That is calculated as a calculation that says you did 40 laps and you had so many incidents. If you were less than a certain mode, then that would translate into plus points. So you'd get extra points towards your safety rating, taking you higher, meaning you're a safer driver. So obviously the ultimate object, 10 laps with no incidents at all, you get an improvement.
It's just safer that way, isn't it? If you just stay well out of trouble.
Exactly. The reverse is where you go the other way and you get safety points and that back off. Now, to be able to race in the other races and to be able to race with other racers and get out of the rookie service where the newbies are, you have to get your safety rating up to a certain level where then you can be promoted. So there's a whole promotion mechanism and license classes, and the licenses are all based on safety rating, and the safety rating can go from zero, which means you're very bad and probably shouldn't be taken anywhere near a car, all the way to 4.99, which means you don't really have hardly any incidents and you've got a great safety rating.
Like light speed, never quite reaches 5.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Not light speed, warp speed in Star Trek.
So at the end, so that model is what you were talking about, John. Is that, you know, that's more real world, because that's how the stewards and marshallings work in the real world. Yeah.
So the simulation extends beyond the actual mechanics of the car. It sounds like they spread it a bit more over the mechanics of the administration of the racing.
Yeah, exactly. They have. Yeah, there's a whole mechanism in for that because, as you rightly pointed out, the races are scheduled at times, usually about one every hour, and they repeat. Some are on the hour, some are half past, and so on and so forth. And there are other series that that go more intermittently and which are a bit more advanced. But when you join the service to start with, you start off as a rookie, and you've got a few races that you can go and drive in, which is where all the other rookies and the learners are, and people that are learning the craft and so on and so forth. And you can go and drive around and do the different things. And usually you'll find that people are losing safety rating all over the place. Everybody comes into the game with this kind of, I'm going to win on the first lap mentality. The first person who can smash the throttle as hard as they can and crash into everybody on the corner and I'll win. And of course, very quickly you realise that your safety rating is down to nothing. Yeah. You get in a Legends car and you budge your way through and then you slam in the wall and then all of a sudden the car will only drive sideways and it's because you've half blown the engine up, you've got a flat tyre, you've bent the steering rack, and by the time you go into the pits and it takes them 12 minutes to fix your car because the engineers are going, God, he's wrecked it! And you get back on the track, the race is more or less over. And so you quickly realise that, and this isn't really like Gran Turismo anymore, is it? It's much more like a real world situation. Because that's what you do to your real car.
What I really like about that, actually, and I think an awful lot of online games and communities should look to adopt a similar model, is you see, you say safety rating, and I say not a tosser rating. You know?
Yeah.
Anything
is,
which filters out the tossers that don't play something properly, or just keeps them together,
yeah,
and then lets you play properly without them, that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, let's talk about that model for a moment. I'm blowing my own little trumpet here a little way. But I've only been playing iRacing a couple of weeks, and I'm doing pretty well compared to the other people that are on there. I've got Class D licences in oval and road circuits. I'm outside of rookies now, and I can race quite competitively against people. I've even placed a few firsts. And there are other guys that have been on there that started a month before me, and I've been talking to some of them, and their safety rating is still rookie. They're through the floor, and there is a reason for that.
They can't get out of that mindset.
No, they are so full of emotion and testosterone, and the longer it goes on, the worse they become. I've raced with some guys who they're spending hours practicing, so they're going round and round and round this circuit to learn the circuit. So they know the circuit really well, and they're fast, don't get me wrong. They go into the qualification sessions and get a post-qualifying time that allows them to start right up at the top of the grid, first, second, third, wherever it might be. They go out into the race, and then they start racing, and often they never finish. Because if they don't crash into somebody else that's crashing in front of them, they crash themselves in the wall. So the first common mistake is they just overdrive. They're driving way too hard. Mm. They're probably ahead of the pack, and then they lose control on the corner, slam it in the wall. Well, now you've got to go into the pits, and by the time it's fixed, you're four laps down, and you can't recover from that. The other one is where that they're starting in the middle of the grid, and they think, I've got to win. To progress in the game, I've got to win. So they're driving hard to win. Of course, they're driving right on the limit of the car. Somebody makes a mistake in front of them, and that car is now spinning out of control in front of you, and you've only got one place you're going when you can't brake because you're so hard in the corner. All you're going is straight into the passenger seat of the car in front of you. Yeah. Bang! Guess what? You're back in the pits.
Yeah.
So you can't drive. So how did I do it? A little note that if you go and do iRacing, any of our listeners that go and do iRacing, this is what I've learned, and this will work for you. For any of the races, don't qualify. Do practice, so if you're on the road circuits, you need to go and learn the circuit and you need to get it down so that you can drive it fast. Don't overdrive. That means go into a corner slowly and come out fast, and the sim will help you do that. Don't qualify for a race. Start at the back of the grid, because by the time half of the race field has crashed into each other and destroyed one another, from the 12 people that started, you're only competitively racing now with four of them. And they might not necessarily be the fastest anyway, because the ones that are the fastest are usually taken out by the rookies and the other bits and pieces. So then you can just drive around the circuit and just try to drive smoothly, drive quick but smooth, always retaining control of the car. If you see an incident in front of you, do what you would do if you were driving through a city. You wouldn't see, oh look, there's a bus coming out there. You wouldn't just carry on going straight into it, would you? You would hit the brakes immediately to avoid the incident. Do the same in sim racing. Hit the brakes immediately. Slow down as quick as you can so that you can get control around it, go past it, I can guarantee that the people coming behind you will they park their cars in the passenger side of the guy that crashed as well. And by the time everybody's finished crashing, you're winning. And your safety rating goes up and your points go up. And that's how I did it. And in 2 weeks, like I say, I'm up there racing with different class drivers and so on and so forth. And once you're out of rookies, it's much easier anyway. So.
Well, because I suppose the other rookies aren't in your way.
Yeah, exactly, they are. I mean, with the best will in the world, even with some experience and trying to drive carefully, you still get taken out. I mean, yeah. I go back, like last night I went and raced in a rookie race, started on the back of the grid, drove around really, really carefully, and then somebody just went and punted straight into the back of my car. They just overdrove the corner, smashed into the back of my car. Well, there's nothing you can do about that. No. But I got safety points taken away for that as well. Yeah. So that happens too, because some people just, well, they get their driving licenses by winning them in the bingo or they come in a Christmas grab.
Yeah, that's right.
So. Got a couple of other points I'd like to nail into.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to look at the tech at some point, because that's what we do here on At Random.
Yeah.
But a couple of questions first. So how realistic is it? I mean, A, physics-wise, and B, course-wise, because I understand that all the courses are modelled on real-world courses.
Yeah.
But are we talking kind of down to the metre, or are we talking just someone's made it in a studio and it's pretty similar?
Well, the stuff that they quote when they're talking about this, and you can see these videos on YouTube, they talk about down to 2 millimetres of accuracy on the car and on the track. They've modelled, I only know one real circuit that I've been to that they've got in iRacing, and that's Alton Park Racing Circuit in Cheshire. I know it really well. I haven't raced there, but I spent, in my early days, my motorcycle club used to go there, and we'd all go and hang out and watch Ron Haslam race around and this, that and the other, and I know the circuit really well. And watching, they did a video on it, and they were explaining that they laser model everything. So they send out a survey team with these laser scanners that scan everything, the buildings, the whole shooting match. And I was stunned when I saw the drive round of Alton Park, because the buildings, even the material that the buildings are made with, as you go down the pit straight, and you can see the buildings there are absolutely spot on. You come and the bridge, the Dunlop Bridge that goes over the track, is absolutely bang on. And the lake, there's a lake there with a whole sequence of trees around it. And as you go down one straight, there's a series of poplar trees that are on the left-hand side. And even the trees are the same. Like, you know, so it's pretty damn accurate.
It's fair to say that the other tracks have probably had that sort of love gone into them.
Yeah, I mean, they were just talking about recently, they just re-scanned Daytona, because Daytona itself, the real world track, has just been completely resurfaced.
Yeah.
And of course, that changes the racing for both the pro racers and the sim racers. We'll talk about that in a minute. But they've sent their scanning team out to re-scan the Daytona surface. They only needed to take the surface of the track, and then they just overlay that back onto the model, and now they've got a new Daytona model with the new surface textures and everything else. So, yeah,
accurate. You're talking lumps in the road accurate.
Yes, you are. I'll put the meat on the bones about this pro and amateur. So there is a pro license series in iRacing as well, and some of the drivers that drive in that series are real world drivers.
Okay.
So Dale Earnhardt Jr., for example, is a real NASCAR driver, races in Impalas and trucks and so on and so forth.
They're sitting there playing the game.
They play the game and they drive real world.
Right.
And they do a few things with it. But one of the things that they commented on, one particular driver commented on, is that when you come out of the pits at Charlotte Raceway or whatever it is, there is a bump in the road, and as you're coming around the corner, if you hit that bump in the road, the car gets knocked by it. And he was absolutely stunned when he came out of the pits onto the circuit in his car, and there was this bump in the road that he hit the car and the objects modelled it and everything else. So it really is, I mean, everything for the iRacing crew is about that level of detail, that level of accuracy. Now, that lends itself really nicely to the pro real world drivers, and there are a whole bunch of them. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Scott Speed, who drives trucks in oval circuits in the States, as well as road race circuit drivers. They drive and race competitively in iRacing, and I suspect that there are some commercial reasons why that helps the game, etc.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But one of the things that they also do is they will use iRacing to learn a track or to test a car on a track. So there is a deal with one particular race team, where the race team give back all the telemetry data from the car to iRacing,
mm-hmm.
And iRacing give them all the track laser scan data. And what that allows you to do is, in the sim then, the car that you're driving now behaves like the real car does because it's got all the data from the track. And of course, the race team get all the track information to model the car chassis and so on and so forth.
Hmm.
And the drivers then drive the sim to learn where the brake point is, where the turning point is, what the camber of the road is, what the scenery is like. So then when you go out to the track, instead of you saying, right, I've got 2 days testing, the first thing I've got to do is learn the track, that's all done with. You know the track already.
Right.
And there are loads of cases of guys, pro racers, guys out there who have, it's one particular video where the guy never even tested his car on the track and won the race because he'd spent the week before racing it in iRacing. So.
I wonder what the level of correlation is. I wonder if you take a really good iRacing driver and put him in a race car for the first time, if it'd be any good.
Well, it's interesting you should say that. So they did it. They did this very thing. There's the chap's name, they call him the alien. And the reason why they call him the alien is because...
Illegal alien? Or?
Well, he comes from Finland. He's a Finnish guy called Gregor Huttu. And the
Finnish?
Video, Finnish.
Finnish line.
Finland. Not Finnish line.
Cross the Finnish line.
Oh, he crosses the Finnish line, usually before everybody else. But
seeking a green card,
He's wickedly fast. This guy is wickedly fast. And I've like got him as one of the drivers that I study at the moment, looking at his performance. Not only is he wickedly fast, but he's really consistent as well. That was one of the things that came across. Anyway, in 2010, I think it was, he won the road circuit championship across the world for iRacing. And so they asked that very question. What would it be like to shove him in a car? So they took him from Finland up near the Arctic Circuit.
Race it.
Yeah.
Against his will.
Yeah, they shoved him in a car.
They flew him. The first time he'd been on a plane out of the country, because he spent most of his time behind his computer, shoved him in a plane, flew him over to the States. He went from Finland, just south of the Arctic Circle, to the Midwest in the States, where it's nice and hot and sticky. And they put him in a Mazda race car, like it looks a bit like a Formula One car. Give him a little bit of training. Obviously, you know, this is the car slightly different. Here you go. Get him on the track. Put him on the track. So he did the first three laps and vomited on lap two in his helmet and was covered in puke because it was really hot and it was just all a bit much. And you can imagine that whole ordeal for somebody. It must be incredibly stressful and incredibly disorientating if you've not done that before. And so as much as you might enjoy it and think, wow, I've won iRacing, I'm going racing, you would find that physiologically hard work, which he did. Anyway, they gave him some, I don't know how many laps they gave him this, but in 2 days, he was racing there for 2 days and being training and this, that and the other. And he took the car out a few times and he was 3 seconds off the fastest lap, which is just like fucking unbelievable. I mean, excuse my language, you can bleep that out if you want. But I've driven Formula Ford race cars at Thruxton. Yeah. And you don't get 3 seconds off the pace. No. You might get 15 seconds off the pace.
That's right. That's
but,
right.
You know, you don't do that when you've not driven a car before. So there is definitely some correlations there between this simulation and the real world.
You can't really argue with that, can you? I mean...
No.
quick random aside, I was watching a YouTube video the other day, and every time the lady spoke on it, they played the Mario, you've picked up a coin sound instead. So you can hear... Ba-ding!
And did you say every time the lady spoke on it?
Yes.
Are you sure lady's the right word? She didn't come out of finishing school, did she, in a language like that?
So I'd like to knuckle into a bit of the tech it gets really. It's probably a bit asking you a bit much to prod you about the client. But it works through the web browser, doesn't it? Quite a lot of it. So you can...
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I'm not entirely sure how it works completely, but it looks to me like it interacts with the web browser. You download some sort of server daemon that runs on your machine. And there's a piece of me that... I wonder if it's not Java-based, but it could be C++-based.
Yeah.
One of those two. But basically, this service runs as a server daemon on your machine. And once you've downloaded that... You then interact with the iRacing service through a browser. Now, the browser is obviously then making calls I suspect, to the local service over a port and triggering the local service to then connect to the servers and do different things, load a track, calling cars or whatever. Something like that, John, is how I think it works.
It's quite interesting because Battlefield 3 does that as well, actually.
Right.
Massive game by EA. And they that's the first game that I ever bought, installed on my PC and not had a menu.
Okay.
So you click start game and it loads up your web browser. But there's some quite interesting things. I'm not sure if they've done this in iRacing, but for instance in Battlefield, the benefits of that are that you can just link to a game. So obviously where before you'd have to say, "Oh, join our game, the server address is this." You have to fire up the game, go into all the menus. Quite often the menus aren't necessarily that easy to use. And then you have to type in some IP address and do all this. Whereas now on Battlefield, you can just copy and paste the link to a match you're in, or you're going to be in, paste it into Skype, and all your friends can click on it, and then the game will just start. That's quite cool, and I guess iRacing has probably got a few similar features.
Yeah.
Like you can click on content, and then as soon as you click on the content, it will just download and install.
You got it. Exactly. That's exactly what it does. And there's loads of... And I can see why that would be a successful model as well, because... in all of the interaction with the game is just like you would interact with a website. And because we do that all the time so frequently now, then the interface, there's nothing to learn. It's very straightforward, except figuring out where things are on a website like you would any other website.
Yeah.
But it's no more difficult than anything else. The great thing about that model, of course, is, as you rightly say, abstracts all of the complexity of connect to this server and this, that and the other, because the game effectively is a link, and that, and then the service deals with everything else. And it does work like that. And on their website interface as well, they're using quite a lot of Ajax. So when you're interacting with it, you're only interacting with one particular element of the page, and it updates and loads itself on the fly. And that makes it work quite sweet as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the more newfangled websites where you don't have to keep refreshing the page.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, graphically, when you look at the when you look at their website looks pretty stunning, and it's put together definitely in a way that would compete with game service, other games and other game websites. But when you actually get into the game and log into it, I didn't get overly excited by the aesthetics of the web interface. It didn't kind of jump out at me and go, "Oh, that looks really shiny." It looked a little bit plain and simple, really. That was my feel to it. Now, obviously, graphical style for a page is more interpretation, and you might have more input on this than I, Jack, but I just sort of felt, "Oh, this seems a bit simple." And then when you click this thing up and then it takes over the screen and off it goes and then the game came through, then it was like, "Oh, wow, okay, it does work all cool." So that was my experience of it.
Cool.
It sounds a little bit like simple, straightforward, no nonsense might be what they're kind of going for, but I kind of get why you sound a little bit disappointed, because when you in something like this, I think it could be quite cool for an interface like that to build a bit of anticipation. Get you like a bit excited because you like you got a race coming up. But I suspect they're just making like no frills. You're just here to race. This is serious racing. This isn't like flashy like console racing. But I think something like that is a good idea, and I see why you like feel the loss of it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So technology-wise, you can play it with a joypad, can't you?
You can play it with a joypad and a joystick, and I tried to play it with a joystick and just caused havoc everywhere. But that was when I was testing it, so I wanted, because I wanted to test it, and obviously buying a steering wheel is quite expensive, you know, 30, 40 quid at the bottom end and more expensive up the top. And I had a joystick, and I thought, well, I wanted to just try it out as for the PlayStation with three reasons that I said at the beginning of the show. I tried it with a joystick and it crashed everywhere because trying to use the accelerator and the joystick to drive a car is really hard. But yes, you can use it like that. I suspect if you had like an Xbox gamepad or a gamepad or something like that, you know, with the little analog sticks on it.
Yeah. And
I suspect you could do it with that.
The triggers up here are analog as well. So the like when I'm racing on Forza 3 at the moment on the Xbox, the braking and the acceleration is analog. It's quite hard to be precise with it, but it is better than having all or nothing, which I suspect is what you had on the joystick.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of analog with the joystick, but yeah, I definitely think it would be better. So yeah, joypad or would probably be like
to play with it. I wouldn't necessarily assume you would. If you enjoyed it, I suspect you would quickly purchase a wheel.
You wouldn't get those Finland boys using a joystick.
No, you wouldn't. No. You wouldn't find Gregor playing it with his PlayStation pad with a bit of tape on it and soldered a different USB connector on it. And having said that, you'll probably send us in a picture now going, grinning.
Yeah. This is it, boys. Someone did it the first time.
This is how I did it in the first way. That's why it took me 2 days to learn how to drive that Mazda. I've never used a steering wheel.
That's what the 3 seconds are all about.
one of those things works quite well. I went out really quickly once I'd played it. I played it one evening, had a couple of goes on the laps. You've got in-racing torque through a headset as well.
So all the other drivers.
Yeah. So I apologised profusely for wiping their race out and told them I'd go out the very next day and buy a steering wheel, which I did. I went out and bought a £80 Thrustmaster F430 steering wheel, which was not totally bottom of the range, but it's not inexpensive, really. And that's absolutely brilliant. It works really well.
I'm under the impression with steering wheels, a bit like gamepads, I guess, for Xbox. If you get the mid-range ones, they're spot on, they're fine. If you get the ones that are cheaper, it's probably not worth that sacrifice. If you're talking £80 or $100, say, for a good one, I suspect if you spent £40 or $60, it would be absolute crap.
Yeah, I think, that was my suspicion, and I didn't test it out, but I suspected that would be right. And I did a bit of online research, first of all, to look at the different peripherals that were out there, and they do go up as much as, like, $1,000 for them. Incredibly expensive. And the ones that a lot of people were playing with were about the sort of £280, about $350.
Wow.
And I thought, well, I am paying that.
That's a PS3, isn't it? You can get Gran Turismo 5 in for
correct,
that.
Correct, yeah.
It's like the front of a car.
And I had to think about it in terms of that model. Like, you know, I mean, spending £80 on the steering wheel, I was thinking, well, it would cost me probably £40 for the game. Mm. And, you know, and that's... You know, and so I'm still saving a lot of money against the PlayStation 3. Because my logic would have been, if it had been adding up to a PlayStation 3, I'd just gone and bought the PlayStation 3. Of course, I can't play iRacing on the PlayStation 3, and now that I've got into it, I'm ever so glad that I did go down that route, because it's really taken me. But you know...
I suspect if you... Kind of the thing is, if you got a PS3, you'd have had to then buy Gran Turismo, and then after probably one day, you'd have got a steering wheel anyway, so...
Yes, you're right. Yeah, I would have done, yeah. So.
The general rule, I think, when buying steering wheels is that you buy the one called the Thrustmaster. If I saw that, there'd be no other choice.
And now we'll take a break for a moment from our advert from our sponsor. Jack, over to you. Tell us about Thrustmaster.
Not that type, Jackson. See, you made a mistake there.
That's the only one I know, I'm sorry.
And remember, listeners, if you subscribe to our mailing list, we'll spam you with Viagra and Thrustmaster emails.
I think Thrustmaster could get us a lot of hints if we drop it a few times.
So, what do you reckon to a virtual car being set up in that little space there in the corner of my room?
It would be awesome.
That would be spot on, wouldn't it? I thought that you were talking about iRating, the little sloped ceiling, you could put the TV screen at the front. Have a little gaming chair at the back. Get rid of the sofa. Who needs a sofa to sit on? That'd be spot on, wouldn't it?
You need to get up B&Q and get some timber and put a little timber frame in there. Get up to James's scrapyard and rip a seat out of a Honda Civic or something and fit the seat in there and get that in there and get that set up. I mean, you could have a proper little rig set up in there. You know, racing helmet, 5-point harness.
Some hydraulics, you know.
I like those old arcade machines.
Oh, they were awesome.
I can't remember how big they were, because everything seemed massive when you remember it being a kid.
Outrun.
Outrun is the big one, isn't it? And that's a couple of the space games had it, but Outrun was the big one, wasn't it? And considering all that movement, all that tech, and when you got to the screen, it was just a little sprite of a car going...
2D graphics, yeah.
Yeah. That's right, and it just didn't justify the grandness. Of course it did at the time, but I always found the funniest bit of Outrun was the woman sitting next to you, and she's like yelling in his ear when you crash the car, and I thought that's hilarious, this domestic spat simulated it.
So I assume you can set up more than one monitor?
Yeah, you can. So, I mean, I was just thinking, coming back to the point about tech and talking about, okay, so how far can you take this with tech? Well, yeah, so you can do something called, I've seen the term, I'm going to write SLI or something like that, or whatever it is, but you can put multiple monitors on it. Inside of this interface itself, it gives you an option to say three monitors before you start. But you can have five, I think, or if you want. And I've seen rigs with five monitors on, but three seems to be quite common, so that you've got, obviously, the front and the two sides.
Yeah.
But you can go beyond that as well, and there seems to be a series of stock peripherals that you can buy. So you can buy, like, additional clocks. So, like, these are real physical clocks that mount and connect via the electronics, via USB to the PC, and then are driven via the APIs and the SDK. And that can be like an LED rev counter and speed and all this kind of stuff. So you can have ancillary clocks. You can buy from Momo, which is a real racing wheel manufacturer, a racing wheel with an LED gear indicator and an LED rev counter, and that's driven by the API as well.
Oh, cool.
On top of that, the whole of the iRacing sim has got a complete software development kit for plumbing into the telemetry. So if you want to, you could also then have a secondary laptop or something that's pulling vehicle telemetry off. So it can tell you things like what your tyre temperatures are doing, what your engine temperatures are doing, all this kind of stuff, and feed it all back to you so that you could... I have no idea what they would do with that, but you can get it back anyway. And then you've got the stand, so that you can go to the nth degree if you want and record that information. Then you've got things like driving hydraulic mechanisms and bumpers. One of the things that people have been talking about a lot is a very cheap thing, which is where you take a big bass cab speaker and you connect the magnets and drive it from a 5.1 surround sound. And then you can have that bumping up and down into a chair. But I've seen other rigs that on YouTube, you can see them where people have got hydraulics that are connected up to it. And when you turn the car in, the hydraulics do this backwards and forwards. And one guy, he's got this aluminium frame in his room with a projector behind him, projecting onto the wall the screen. He's got this Momo steering wheel that I talk about with the secondary clock and the telemetry laptop and a rig going over the top. He's got 5-point harnesses into a racing seat with this hydraulics kicking backwards and forwards, okay? And he's got a helmet. And I'm thinking to myself, like, is this because when you have an accident, you're going to fly out of your chair and crash into the living room wall? But, I mean, you can go to that degree, I suppose, to create the realism. And all the software development tools for doing that are all there, and they're documented, and there's a developers forum and all that kind of stuff. So you can geek out in a massive way if you want to.
But only on Windows, right?
Only on Windows. It doesn't run on anything else.
That must be painful for you, Rick, to leave your safety of Linux.
Really, really painful for me, yeah. I just don't like it. I really don't like it at all. But by the same score, there isn't anything else that I've come across that compares, for me, as a motor racing fan, that compares like this does. This is like that other two or three steps to being in the real world compared to being in a game.
Cool. So anything else you'd like to just tack on the end there before we wrap this up?
Not really. I think... it's very well worth going and taking a look at. Sadly, there isn't a kind of free trial for a week or something like that. The only trial you can get, you have to pay $12 for and try it for a month. So, you know,
that's $12 every month, yeah?
$12 every month, yeah, because you're paying for a subscription to the service. And then you also buy content inside of the game as well. So it's not quite as cheap as you might think, because by the time you've added in circuits and so on and so forth, the costs start to ramp up a little bit.
If Rick will play it on Windows and pay monthly for it, then you know it has to be good. It's probably worth a look.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely worth a look. What I would say is, if you find out about it via this show and you do, you know, get involved in it, then drop us an email if you want, and I can send you a promo code, so we could do a promo code for people. So we could send that. So that's show@random.org. And of course, look me up in Race. I'm Rick Timmis, easy to find.
He means watch out for him.
If you can get up to its Uber level of quality driving and security level, and it'll probably take you months and months and months, but you know, you'll get there one day.
And if you've got safety rating to spare,
give him a nudge. on the track.
Yeah, no nudging, thanks.
Brilliant. So that's iRacing.com, and I might check that out myself later on, actually. So.
Cool.
Well, that brings us to the end of our first show in 2012.
Maybe our last.
Aye.
What with it being 2012 and all.
How many shows can we get in before the Mayan apocalypse hits us?
They didn't tell us, did they? They weren't specific enough, I don't think.
Oh, we should do a show about the Mayan calendar.
I think we absolutely should. Yeah. Absolutely we should, yeah.
That'd be brilliant. Maybe we'll wait until the first week of 2013. Rub it in.
So if you don't hear that show, you know the prophecy was true.
So we won't even plan it until the day before, just in case.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, I'll start the outro, fellas, and somebody needs to, once we've done that, somebody should introduce the Magnatune track at the end. But I've really enjoyed talking about iRacing. I'm fully enthused about it at the moment. As you can tell, I think it's absolutely great, and go and check it out. This is At Random. My name's Rick Timmis.
I'm John Wordsworth, and I'd love to hear from you by email. So send us an email at show@random.org if you do pick up iRacing.
And I'm Jackson Matthews, and we are Systematic, Hydromatic and Ultramatic in that order.
And we're going to be leaving you this evening with a track from Magnatune. It's Somadrone Fizz.